What's happening, family? It is your man, CRB Jr., Courtney Robert Brown Jr. here at Big Boss Filmworks. It is going down again. We again want to thank everybody out there for the support and the growth of the channel. You know, it's just great. The whole family and this whole Detroit thing, you know, the whole journey. It's been 11 years since the book came out, Motown Mafia, Memoirs of a Kingpin's Kid. This December will be the 10th anniversary of the award-winning documentary, Motown Mafia, the story of Eddie Jackson and Courtney Brown, to the Kingpin's Kid radio, to the podcast, and again, we're deep, knee-deep in negotiations about bringing the story of my dad and the fat man to life. The channel has grown. We're getting a lot of love from all the Detroit stories and people nationwide. And so again, so continue the movement, and fellas and family, ladies and gentlemen, hit that like, share, and subscribe button. But today I am so excited because we have a special guest. Me and this guy have been friends for multiple decades now. The story that he's involved in was in its day, was our story in the early 70s. Popping them was kind of the biggest story in Detroit during the 70s. His story from the early 90s, I would say, to the mid 90s.
Well, 80s.
Actually, it begins in the 80s. So with no further ado, we have with us Carl Martin, the son of the legendary U of M booster and Detroit numbers Kingpin Ed Martin, and this is his son. And Carl, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, Courtney. I'm privileged to be here, brother. And I wanted to say that I love your platform. I'm a fan of it. I view it. Your content is great, man. So keep up the good work there. And I hope I can contribute to that.
Oh, no, you will. You know, we've been talking about this. Me and Carl have come from the same a bunch of similarities in background and peer group. And also, you know, I'm so excited and happy. We've been talking about doing some collaboration work. Because if you guys don't know, to cut to the chase. So we're going to start going into, this is Carl's book, The Booster. It is available at booster.net. It's also available at Amazon and Amazon Audible, right?
Yes, correct.
But we're going to go into what this is about. But as you see on the title of the book here, it is The Booster. How Ed Martin, that's Carl's dad, the Fab Five, and the Ballers from the Hood exposed the hypocrisy of a $1 billion industry. It is an awesome read. You definitely got to. Obviously, we're going to be doing some things and really unpack, because there's no way in one sit down or one post we could even begin to. But we want to just kind of start from kind of the beginning. So because there's two parts, I think, you know, in your story that are just really fascinating. One, your father's numbers business that you end up getting involved with. And I know some of our audience may be young, and these are lottery tickets from the state of Michigan and lottery tickets from the state of Florida. There was a time when me playing 12-19 for $1 in hope of a 1-6 payoff was illegal.
Yes.
And people who did that service were called the numbers man.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, policy kings, or whichever term, if you go back in history, it was the policy business. So there's a different name for it, but it was all illegal then, like it is for someone as myself to run it now. It's just that it's so easy to do because the state is taking over in most places.
Right. So in your guys' day, and surely in your dad's day, it's fair to say that the numbers man was pretty much sat in the hierarchy along with the preacher and the funeral parlor owner as the triple-headed kings of the urban community.
Yes, right? Yes. And actually, some of the larger numbers men have built several of the churches that are in Detroit currently back in the day. So not only did they sit in their hierarchy, they performed with them in conjunction and on their level to assist their goals too.
And I think if you can go back like to Negro League Baseball, a lot of the funding that allowed us to create our own sports leagues came from the policy or number kingpins,
yes,
right?
Yes, it did. Well, when you generate cash, you generate money, those entrepreneurs tend to extend themselves to other areas that can generate more money. And so you go into other legitimate businesses, but you also serve your community. And that's what the example of the Negro Leagues have been for, that's in conjunction with the numbers, as well as churches. Those were needs of the community or desires of the community, and the money that numbers generated served those desires.
Yeah, and obviously Hollywood has touched on a little bit of it. You've got the movie The Cotton Club that chronicled Bumpy Johnson. Hoodlum, again, mm-hmm. the follow-up of that, which Madame Stephanie St. Clair, and again, Bumpy Johnson, who now is being chronicled by Forrest Whitaker in the epic series, The Godfather
So it
ties in. We're going to obviously get opportunity in later in future interviews to really go into how your father, who was kind of a numerical genius, I mean, he had a born inclination, right?
Yes, he did. And I call them mini performances at the plant, in which the crowd would gather around, probably because they're coming to the table to see what the actual number was. And someone would say, hey, Ed, do that thing, you know. And so several people would call out digits, 4 digits and 3 digit numbers at random. And as they called them out, Ed would actually calculate the total. When the last number was called out, he gave you the total right away. And there's someone there struggling, trying to catch up with him with the calculator. And they hit the total button and say, hey, he did it again. He's right. But he can do that. I mean, it was amazing.
And it kind of goes back to something I was just saying in one of my last posts about it. Because of the way that our society, you know, we so quickly attribute words like geniuses and gifted to other cultures and people.
Yes.
For whatever reason, we find it difficult to attribute those words, genius and gifted, to people who look like ourselves. But that is what it is. But, I mean, it's just so much to unpack with you here, Carl. So, to kind of in synopsis, your father was able to build a very successful policy business, numbers business, right? Yes. And what led to you guys is becoming infamous, notorious, famous, even though I laugh because, again, we come from a similar background. There was, to say it was a secret that your dad was a big numbers man is a joke. Because secret, if that's a secret, you know, that's...
And how can you serve hundreds or even thousands of people, let's say, in a public arena like the plant, and it be a secret that you're doing so? So no. Right.
And then later, to say it was a secret that your father was involved with, because there's some people who are still really, really public today, that your story crosses paths, and we're going to get into that. It wasn't a secret that your father was supporting people like, let's put it out there, Chris Webber, Jalen Rose.
Right. Robert Traylor.
Robert Tractor Traylor, Motel.
You know, and there's many others, especially considering he supported the Southwestern basketball program for years. And he was their uncle, big brother type of person, mentor. So, yeah, it's dozens of people that he actually helped. And not all were males. There's some women who were ballers. He helped them too, you know.
Well, when you guys did the kind of private book release a couple of years ago, you know, what really impressed me was a lot of the guys who played on the Southwestern team who did not go on to be the Anderson Hunts, the GoPro, the Jalen Rose, right, all the people that were in your dad's orbit. But the players who were at the end of the bench who spoke about that your father treated, whether you were Jalen Rose or damn near the water boy, if you were a part of the Southwestern family, he looked out for Southwestern. He didn't just look out for Southwestern's blue chip players.
Absolutely, because his goal was to help his and our and their community. So he was in the Southwestern community and assisted all. I mean, Johnny Johnson, a player at Southwestern in the day, says it best, you know, that Southwestern was a home for Ed, but it also was a great place for them because he was there. So they held whatever he said and whatever he did tight to the vest. In other words, where people outside of that community did not have that type of loyalty, and they also did not have it's kind of getting ahead, but the scrutiny that a great coach like Perry Watson put on them to make the whole system work. I want to add one thing. Ed is extremely generous. So Perry had to make sure that he didn't go too far, too fast with the players because they had to earn what they got. So he had a balance there. So Southwestern was a great environment for them, but it was good for Ed too.
And on that Perry Watson note, and just for those who don't know, I know if you grew up in the Detroit area, and you're over 35 years old, you will remember the high school dynasty that Detroit Southwestern was. Yeah. And their head coach was a gentleman by the name of Perry Watson. Perry Watson would go on later to be assistant coach at the University of Michigan, right?
Yes.
And then eventually head coach
at University of Detroit.
So when you hear Dick Vitale on ESPN talk about it, and it's a diaper dandy, that all plays into how, due to the events of those Southwestern players, and yes. Dick Vitale leaves to go on, and this is the gentleman. There may have been one coach in between.
It was.
But Smokey Gaines, Smokey in between, and Smokey came after that.
No, he came before. He came in between Dick
and Perry. Yeah. And Perry, right? So there's this basketball dynasty that this coach, Perry Watson, has started to attribute to. And we were just talking before we got on camera, right? Yes. If we go back a little bit before you guys really get involved with I should take that back. So I was telling you an anecdote that the first time I remember seeing the Southwestern juggernaut was down at Callahan Hall, Detroit playoffs, and there was a senior guard by the name of Leslie Rockamore.
Yes.
Now, at that point where Leslie Rockamore is leading Southwestern to the city championship, were you guys active? Was your dad, were you guys active yet with the Southwestern family?
That was the actual, the beginning year when Antoine was a sophomore, Leslie was a senior. My father really got involved with it because Antoine is actually the son of a co-worker of my father's, and that's how they kind of hooked up. You know, he said, "Hey, is this your son?" He said, "Yeah, well, you got to come out and see him sometime." He said, "Bet, you know, let's do that." So that's when it started. And once he came out, he saw something in Southwestern High that was different than a lot of other schools, which was a great amount of discipline, drive, and they had a greater sense of their community, being Southwest, which is kind of an area that's on its own in Detroit. It's not just a mix of the east side, west side. It's down river. It's close to the river. It's a different area. And they have a sense of community there. I think that was greater in some of these other areas. So yes, that was the beginning.
Right. So that's Antoine the Judge Joubert. Correct. And again, I think if you're of a certain age, following the Rockamore, because Leslie Rockamore then goes on
to U of M.
Yeah. So Antoine's a sophomore then.
Yes.
His junior year, he is getting all the rave, right?
37 points per game with no 3-point line. That's his average.
Wow. As a junior. Whoa. He was a phenom. He was.
Ooh, he was probably the greatest scorer that I've known of in high school basketball.
By his senior year, he wins the Mr. Michigan High School Player of the Year, right?
Yes.
And I'm not sure, but I know he was ranked in the top five high school players in the country.
Yes, for sure.
Right.
You know, on anyone's ranking, he was top five. You know, he was number one, number two on most of them.
Right. And he goes on.
Yes.
So now this is two players, two highly profiled players leaving Southwestern.
Yes.
Your dad's starting to really get into the orbit of the Southwestern thing.
Yes.
And then the backdrop, some other players from that era, Roy Tarpley coming out of Cooley.
Yeah.
He goes on to Michigan. I think they win the championship.
Well, Roy didn't win the year that he wasn't on the championship team. But they won the Big Ten. They won the NIT. They won some other things, but they were very competitive. They had Gary Grant, who wasn't from this era, from Ohio. But he, and they had almost a similar situation when they got Richard Relford and all those guys. But Antoine joined a great team, and they performed very well.
Who else out of that era? You had B.J. Armstrong, who was at Brother Rice, who went on to Iowa, of course, went on to the Chicago Bulls and won some rings with Jordan.
That's right.
Right?
Willie Burton, one of the few people to score 50 in the league, NBA, you know, one.
Where'd he come out?
He came out of DePores.
Willie Burton came out of DePores. So what I'm trying to say, family, at this time in the city, everybody like knew somebody who was, and we were saying off camera, the effects of what was going on in Detroit high school basketball in the PSL was pretty much dictating who was going to win the Big Ten, who was probably going to play in the Final Four.
Yes.
So, I mean, it was a really impactful thing because this city was just producing. So in this, if this is the backdrop, that these kids are big time local kids, but everybody kind of knows, look, 2 years from now, they're going to be playing in the ACC, in the Big Ten, in the Pac-10, and where they go, so there becomes finance. There is a business element, right?
Yes, it is.
Of all that. So what begins to happen is, so it'll pick me up from there. So your dad, you got Leslie Rockmore. Yeah. He leaves, he goes to U of M. Your dad, I didn't know that, or actually I did read it in the book. I do remember that point, that your dad and Antoine's dad.
Yeah.
So kind of bring us up to speed a little bit on what happens after that.
Yeah. A little quick story about Rocky Moore. He was going to U of M, and my dad went to Southwestern, and he was playing baseball then. A lot of the guys that played basketball at Southwestern either started in or continued to play baseball. It was big down in Southwest Detroit. But long and short of it, Leslie said, yeah, I'm going to U of M. And my dad said, yeah, and you were thinking you were going to room with one person, but he said, but I have it that that'll be a change there. The bottom line is, Rocky Moore said, well, how does this guy know anything about what's happening with me at U of M? Who is this guy really? And he found out that he was correct about his roommate change, because Ed Martin had, wherever he goes, he makes connections with the powers that be, you know? So he already had connections at U of M that would give him information that it wasn't clandestine. It was just something that would transpire in a conversation, especially concerning the kids that Ed supported. But long and short, Leslie goes. 2 years later, Antoine shows up, and now Ed's a constant fixture at games, et cetera, because the 2 years that Antoine was in high school, we became closer and closer as families, as groups. We shared meals at each other's homes all the time. So we were a tight unit. So, of course, when we went to U of M, that just continued. But what it did is it showed Ed that, you know, these kids can make it to these major universities. But now they're in an environment where most of the people are wealthy. As a student at U of M, you're with other students who are capable of things greater than you. So Ed wanted to pad their landing there on campus. But one thing he said is, if they have a couple dollars pocket money, then they can participate on the group pizza outing, take the girl out for something that they see other students doing. So they can be a part of the campus environment and the atmosphere and not feel excluded.
So two things on that point. So we're talking about a guy having to worry about athletes at schools like the University of Michigan, which are creating millions and billions of dollars.
Yes.
But there is a real scenario where you could be a star at the University of Michigan basketball team,
yes,
and not have money for Domino's pizza.
Yes.
That could really happen.
And
right?
Then the booster, we talked with Jimmy King, one of the Fab Fivers, and he's sitting there saying, like, I didn't know a lot of this was going on. I wasn't getting any money. You know what I mean? So therefore, there's a different pattern for different kids. When you go to U of M, they were fortunate to have Ed because he provided, really, to me, finances for some of their better players that kept them settled and in place and concentrating on basketball.
And to go back, your father come from very humble beginnings.
Yes. Yes.
So, like any man who comes from a humble beginning and then goes on to acquire the kind of wealth that your dad did,
yes,
you always have if you're a good-hearted person as your father was, you always have a soft spot because when you know what it is to be poor.
Yeah, that's right.
When you know what it is to be broke, or you know what it is to be poor and see other people who are not.
Right.
You have a spot
for them, yeah,
for them,
to help them avoid that situation.
That feeling
of being poor and actually suffering from that. You know, the high school kids, it wasn't unusual for my dad to go in and see that a kid's home was in disarray, or there's three buckets in the living room catching water, and these type of things, and try to cure those issues in order to release the student at that time, student athlete, from the drudgery of having to deal with maybe coming home and not having power, no lights to do your homework in, and that type of thing. that would distract you from your mission of being the best student you could be and the best athlete that you could be. He wanted to remove those barriers, or at least as many of them as he could, to smooth their pathway to success. And he chose athletes because they showed him a few things. First of all, the discipline to get up first thing in the morning and practice because the volleyball team had the gym in the evening or whatever. But the dedication to play on a Perry Watson team proved your muster. It really showed that you had the ability to succeed in life. And so that's why the athlete was one of the persons or the type of people that he focused on, because they had, he already knew they had what it takes. Now they just needed the way. So he helped provide the way.
Okay, so you got Rock's up there in U of M. Mm-hmm. The Antoine is there. You guys are getting closer to knit. So just again, we're going to have Carl around for a bunch of different things. But so you guys got, of course, this story ends to get to the end of it, but we're going to have to get there. There will be a major federal investigation.
Yeah.
Your father will be indicted on some charges.
Yeah.
Yourself will be indicted on some charges. Yeah. But at this point, where Rock's at U of M, Antoine goes there, your dad is really solidifying his relationship with Coach Watson and this whole Southwestern family, right? Is there, as the finance of he's seeing, because he knows these kids are, some of them are economically challenged.
Yeah.
When does that, is that during the Antoine Joubert period? Is this really the boostering of Southwestern, which then of course leads to the boostering of you? When does that start to kick in?
It does start with Antoine Joubert. So we're talking, you know, early 80s then.
Okay.
And by being involved with Antoine and his family, and being more exposed to the other kids, you know, he saw some kids that, you know, really needed mentoring, they needed counseling, they needed a lot of things. Things that go on in the hood, man, you know how it is. You could have, you're going to have single parent homes predominantly. I think Terrence Wheeler, a player that was at Southwestern, said that he named like two kids that had fathers in the home out of the time he was there.
Wow.
Like 4 years he was there. And so, you know, the home life is going to be deficient because it's mostly single parent working. And you have these kids who aspire to be great athletes and they're working hard at it, but the hurdles sometimes get in the way. And Southwestern, you had to do your schoolwork. Yeah, you couldn't play unless you were getting your grade. So that was a focus as well. And Ed would talk more about academics with the kids than basketball because he had Perry at Southwestern, who was the basketball genius. But the kids would tell me that. Now, I don't talk with Ed about that. And they really liked that because they knew he was interested in them as much as their ability to play ball. And so someone cares about you, you tend to listen, you tend to perform on a higher level because you got those eyes on you, but you got the interest in you too. So, yeah, but that's when his boostering started. And it started with, you know, a few things, buy some little clothes, different things. But because of the excessive nature, you know, it's always rumored that Antoine's nanny goat was purchased by Ed. And that's true, as well as other things. But it was more of a help aid then, and to just, it's and a reward at times for good play, good performance. And another thing T. Will says is like, he was attaboy. We get a little something for basketball, but when I brought home that good report card, I always knew I could get me a couple hundred dollar handshake off of that one. So,
I think a lot of times with this stuff, we in our community, there are cultural patterns, there are cultural ways in everybody's culture.
Yeah.
Everyone, if we're just real about it, if you're a black man in America and in your orbiter circle, people know that you have resources and access.
Yes.
You are obligated, you are culturally obligated to help people.
Yes.
You know, we don't want to talk about it. Sometimes I think we put on blinders. You know, you can't be the guy that's getting money in our community. And then you got a high school kid who's doing big things and you see a future in him.
Right.
And then you let him go home with lint in his pocket.
Yeah.
That's just not how our culture works.
Well, because, you know, our culture, we understand that That's not how it works. It's like those who can reach out and help should, because ain't nobody else there. So how do we elevate our community, ourselves above this level of poverty and the life of disdain, unless we, once we reach a certain level of success, reach back down and help to pull somebody else up? This is just the way we, as you know, the Black community has had to survive.
And so I guess I'm trying to get to, and at that point, you guys were not, were you thinking, hey, do you know by us doing these things in some way, we may be violating their amateur athletic status?
No. Won't say we didn't have knowledge of it, but knew that in high school, you were allowed to do a lot more things.
Really?
Yes. It's just the NCAA puts the clamps on. So what we put in,
I'm sorry, Carlos. Okay.
Yeah, he can just keep riffing this and cut it.
And you don't turn off your phone. I'm sorry, continue.
No problem. Yeah. So what you realize is that the kids, everyone in life needs help. Some families can provide help to their kids, et cetera, themselves. Many of them can. That doesn't mean they don't need it. And so when you try to meet the needs, you're trying to meet the needs of the person where they're at and for what is needed at that time. And that's what Ed tried to do. His like situation was, okay, you're always going to be able to eat. You got to have a place to sleep. You got to have a warm place to sleep. You have to have the essentials in life. A lot of what he provided were those essentials, because you have to meet a person where they're at. Right.
And from the book, and you know, and then from your father's riding very nice cars.
Yeah.
Your father liked to drive nice vehicles.
Yes, he did.
Your father liked to wear very nice clothes.
Yeah. I would say he was known to have the coldest tracksuit collection.
Coldest track, you know. Right. Yeah. So again, that how I'm gonna be, it's obvious how I'm living.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's obvious how you're living.
Right.
But yet I say I support you.
Yeah.
But I don't do anything for you?
Yes.
Well, we know in our community that's not really how that works.
It's not. You know, we know that those of means, no matter how they derive those means, have always supported our kids and our communities going to being educated, et cetera. I know a lot of people that went to U of M with the help of street money, put it that way. Mm-hmm. And they would focus on, now, don't go astray, because this money will end. This is for you to do a certain thing. It's not for you just to be pocketful or walk around, you know, feeling good about yourself because you got a couple of dollars, just to help keep you directed, you know. And now you don't have to be distracted by the need of a sandwich or a meal because you got that. We provide that, you know.
So let's drop a few names, and you kind of just give us a couple,
sure,
little backdrop on how your path, you and your dad's path. Let's say the best for last, or I shouldn't say in best. Best in quotes. On TV all the time, seems to be a great guy, Jalen Rose. Obviously left Southwestern, went on to U of M, Fab Five, long NBA career.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now seen on like four or five, yeah, different platforms.
And deservedly so. I will say Jalen is
awesome. How that start? How you and Jay Rose path?
How did it started? My father saw Jalen play at a PAL league. It was several other players. C. Webb was there, we'll get to him. Vashawn Leonard, Howard Isaac. But he said Jalen and Chris stood out. And so when my father sees someone that is performing on a high level in almost anything, it attracts his eye. And so in basketball, it's the same way. He said, man, I'm gonna go talk to that guy and see what he's about, you know. And then one guy came over to him, and this is blending the two. They said, yeah. They would tell them whose parent was who, you know. So then, because my father always went through parents. He didn't go directly through kids. Maybe he saw them at the kid at first. But he would always, if he was going to assist that kid, he was going to get the permission from the parents. So nobody had ever got a dime necessarily from Ed. It was done in a rogue manner. It was done with the acknowledgement that I'm just helping out. Would you accept this help, type of thing. So Jalen, my father liked Jalen a lot from the beginning. Jalen had, and it still has, but had a certain swag, a certain mentality, and he was tough as nails. And he worked harder in practice, viewing Southwestern practices, than anybody. He's the star, but he set the stage, you know? And that's what we liked about Jalen. He knew it was going to take hard work to be a success. His mother, Jeannie Rose, God rest her soul, recently passed. And it was hurtful to our community because his mother was such a standard. So when Ed and Jeannie communicated, they were fine. Jeannie would always say, okay, not Ed, not too much. Not, so she regulated what her son even got. But she said she always appreciated the support. But if he did anything extra for Jalen, Jeannie would make sure that he got that money back. That's just how strong of a woman and determined she was, you know, to send her son in the right direction. And that's who Jalen became. So one reason why probably Jalen didn't get nearly as much as Chris ended up getting because they were different character people.
Yeah. Wow. And yeah, we'll get to that. So okay. It wasn't that Jalen couldn't have got.
Nope.
It was just his family unit and the quality of mind that he had that they didn't, just because it was there, didn't mean we go cuckoo.
Right. Exactly. And that's good because Jalen didn't, he worked hard. He still works hard. I mean, I don't know how many hours he must work to be on these 3-4 shows.
You know?
But that work ethic was instilled by Jeannie. It was grabbed and handled by Jalen. And you see where it has taken this man from the inner city. In a single parent household, didn't know his father Jimmy Walker until where he's at now. You know, it's a great story.
It is,
and did help that. Yes.
So again, we'll go into it more later with Carl. But you guys are fans of Jalen Rose, really fans of that whole era at University of Michigan. Got to check out Booster. Got to go to booster.net. Available on Amazon, also Amazon Audible. Yeah. Now present head coach at University of Michigan, yes. Juwan Howard,
yes.
Big deal.
Yeah.
I gotta ask you, because of, you know, because of your situation, your father's situation, and when this whole Fab Five thing implodes, mm-hmm. the banners are taken down at U of M. Yes. You know, you guys are made to be just. And now, a member of that said Fab Five team, teammates of Chris Webber and Jay Rose, who were all actually called in when the feds finally get involved in this, right? They're teammates. And now Juwan is the head coach of said Michigan basketball program. What do you think about that?
It was the best move. Ward Manuel, hand clap. Because there were some other candidates, and a lot of powers that be were kind of pushing for other people. They didn't think Juwan was ready. They always give you that thing. Juwan Howard, it's the best thing that happened to Michigan in a long time because he has connections with all the majors. He won championships with LeBron James. Yeah, he can pick the phone up and call LeBron James, who can call someone who may be thinking about going to Michigan. What I'm saying is they bought in a power broker. He was just a black power broker. I mean, Juwan is a wonderful person, too. I mean, he has been from day one, you know, and you're happy when someone of that character is rewarded for holding and keeping that character in place.
Because Juwan comes out of Chicago, correct?
Yes, he does.
Because I remember, because you articulate in the book how that nexus of what would be known as the Fab Five, right, came together. I think one of the kids were out of Texas.
Yeah, both Jimmy and Ray were from Texas. Different places in Texas. Yeah.
And then you had Chris comes out of Country Day.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to it. Mr. Webber, Chris Webber, just inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I believe in his Hall of Fame. Well, okay, let's go back to how's Chris Webber even coming to you guys? Because you guys are entrenched in the Southwestern family. Barry Watson, but Chris Webber's at Detroit Country Day.
Yes. Actually, when they met, he wasn't at a high school because it was before both of them, Jalen and Chris, went to high school.
Wow.
So, that summer, Ed and My brother, et cetera, we became associated with or knowledgeable of Chris and Jalen, et cetera. So much that they would come over that during that summer. And, we had pickup games in the driveway playing with them guys and another guy who went to U of D by the name of Mike Hamilton. I speak to him posthumously because he was a great player too. But the debate was, we knew Jalen, he was almost born to go to Southwestern.
Okay.
But because of their growing closeness, Jalen and Chris, by playing AAU in the summer, et cetera, they wanted to go to school together. And if you're going to go somewhere, you're going to go play for the best basketball coach around Perry Watson and not necessarily, you know, to another school, suburban school. So Jalen wasn't going nowhere. He was going to Southwestern.
Okay.
Our goal was to get Chris or my dad's to go play with Jalen at Southwestern.
At Southwestern.
Yeah. And in the booster, we tell the whole story, but long and short of it, he was registered to go there, but a teacher strike prevented him from starting school on time, so he went to Country Day, where he had a place waiting for him, and his mother wanted that more than she wanted the public school education anyway. And so that's how he ended up there. Had it not been a strike and him being registered, he probably would have been, obviously a Southwestern a prospector as opposed to going to Country Day. So
that would have been a scary team.
I mean, Southwestern, that team eventually won a couple championships, state championships without Chris. I mean, Chris won some with his squad. But it would have been probably the best team to ever be in high school.
Cool, right.
With both Sean Leonard and Howard Eisley and other pros.
Those guys all went pro, right?
All went pro. But, when Chris ended up going to Country Day, he was the first player that my father associated with outside of Southwestern. Okay. And that's how much how fine he was of Chris. And actually, how fine Chris pretended to be, which as a 14-year-old, 15, I don't know if he was pretending. I believe it was earnest at that point.
Right.
Okay. What I didn't understand, what we'll get into at some other point, is what the backdrop of Chris Webber's career was, and that is his home life that must have led him to require and want more than the generous Ed Martin was delivering off the grid, meaning that's just who he was.
Or who his parents were.
Yeah. His parents, to me, were the catalyst for him to come in and ask for the extended assistance. I'm getting a little ahead of the story, but that he got from my dad that then was scheduled to be paid back. So keep in mind, all the money my dad gave to any of these players without them having some special deal or asking for more was just gratis. That's what he was given. He didn't have any qualifications on actually getting paid back or getting that money back. That was his contribution.
So to kind of unpack that, you got a situation where your dad's looking out for people. Just we looking out because we can.
Yeah.
And your dad's a big follower. That's a big follower. I can.
Yeah.
I like doing it.
I like doing it.
It make me feel good to do it.
Real good. Right.
Remind me and let y'all everybody know that's because this is who I am. Yeah. This is how I'm living. Right. Eventually, with some of these players, in particular Chris Webber, there becomes a business element, which is to say, like you said, beyond I'm gonna look out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I guess, maybe a scenario. You tell me if I'm off. You know, we go out to dinner. You guys know I'm doing good, so I always pay for dinner. Mm-hmm. No biggie.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the club. I pick up the tab.
Right.
I ask you every blue moon, you good in your pockets? You say, no, according to you, yeah. Okay.
Right.
Here, hold this.
Right.
But then you start, somebody says, you know, if you could.
Hey, what we're saying is, hey, look, Uncle Ed, you know I got a big family and we don't have that much. And yeah, it's going good, but it could be better if I could get more assistance from you, that'd be great, because then it would take some of the pressure off of my dad and mom and different things. And he was like, okay. He said, and plus, you know I'm going to make it. And when I do, he said, I'm going to take good care of you.
So let me ask you, at that point, so Chris is in high school at Country Day. Now he's already ranked really high as a high school player. So, no one knows you for sure you're going pro, but what you kind of knew early in his career is you're definitely going big time D1.
Yes.
And with the physical specimen he was.
Yes. Yes.
A betting man would have said he goes to the big league.
That's right.
He goes to the big league.
That's right.
Right? Do you think now, looking back, and now, of course, we have you got the clarity of time,
yes.
having done time, done these affairs, yes. and time and perspective and all that, how this has played out. And do you think it was a 14-year-old saying that, or was he a mouthpiece for his parents?
So he was a mouthpiece for his parents. That's my direct answer. And I say that because, you know, the reason why I keep pointing to the booster, because there's so much that I put into it that explain a lot of the details.
Yeah, you gotta read the book to get the whole story.
Right, but I will say, I mean, you know, after he went pro, a call to his dad resulted in do me a favor and don't call here no more. And you wonder like, whoa, where did this come from? This is the same guy that was riding in the backseat as I chauffeured him to Big Ten games in Purdue and Ohio State and different places, and sat in the back with wine and cheese provided by Ed, having a good time, talking about, well, you know, you guys really going to be surprised what we do for you when Chris makes it. You're going to be surprised. And so I used to have a joke with my dad after he made it, and we were unpleasantly surprised. I say, hey, Dad, he said, well, I say, aren't you surprised at what he done for you? We just laugh. And he ain't done a damn thing, you know?
Right. So in the book, there's, I don't know if it, because once he gets from Country Day, he's at U of M. And by this time, they're U of M. You guys are all really, really
chummy.
Yes. But I guess his parents didn't have money to get to the final, one of the Final Fours. I don't know if it was the timeout year, the first Final Four. They went to the second Final Four.
So the first Final Four, we got my mother, then mother-in-law's van, nice one of those, what do you call those?
When Astro van, was it?
Yeah, but it was when you fix it up. Customized van, okay. And we piled all the Webers. We had three brothers and a sister. They all came, and his mother. They were riding. I drove the van with them in it to the Twin Cities. Deacon Weber, Macy Weber, Chris's dad, rode with my father to the, you know, it was men's day. They, you know, kind of, they probably gonna have a little nip or something like
that. Right.
I mean, they doing that thing, right?
Right.
And so we were responsible for transporting the whole Weber clan to the first Final Four.
Okay.
The second Final Four, my dad bought plane tickets so they could fly to New Orleans, and we were responsible for transporting them there. And I have to say this now, all the time. Well, Chris Webber took a stage a couple weeks ago for his Hall of Fame inductee speech.
Right.
And he thanked everybody in the world that was a part of his life. I know he doesn't admit now that Ed was this integral part of his life, so he's not going to mention him. But it was disrespectful and hurtful for a man to get up and say, all these people helped me get to this position, and just leave out one of the main people that did that, that gave him assistance and provided his way. Talking what fork to eat at a formal dinner table, what each glass was for. This is the relationship they had. And he says this is there was a relationship of like a predator praying through the fences of playgrounds, preying on kids, you know, saying he loved them and then trying to trade that love for financial gain. This is delusional. This is a man who sat in my house comfortably many years, many times, ate at my table, et cetera. And I'm speaking of Chris Webber.
Okay.
And now he wants that to disappear. There's something psychological that says, okay, I'm up now. Oh, and I never was down, was I? I never needed anybody's help, you know, and that's what's wrong.
Yeah, I think for all the people who know you and who knew your dad, and just especially from this, or who really know, because the thing is, to the greater public, the Detroit News, the Detroit Free Press, ESPN, mm-hmm. Channel 2, ABC, CBS, and NBC told the story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Right.
They didn't let you tell your story.
No.
You know, University of Michigan ran for the hills when the feds got involved with this whole thing. The U of M ran to the hills and
they cut all ties, pulled down flags, banners, and anything. They
We don't know Ed Martin, Chris Webber, J. Rose.
Although we tell up in the booster also that they knew of Ed Martin back when Coach Bill Frieder was there, and they knew of his activities because they have long arms. They can reach into any pot they want to with over 500,000 alumni, mm-hmm. et cetera. So they knew of him, but they allowed this to go on because it was to their benefit.
So we were spoken, and you know, me and some folks talking, and you know, I don't know if Chris Webber's just involved in revisionist history. I think all the people, of course, who really know And of course, that's why we're here, and you know, going to be doing this thing. Right, to thank Isaiah Thomas, and I'm not knocking Isaiah, I'm not knocking Isaiah, but to bring up Isaiah and say that he provided financial support so that parasites or predators, I believe was the phrase.
Vultures. Thank you.
You know, and that was a veiled, if even veiled, I don't even think it was a veiled shot at you guys. I don't even think it was a veiled shot. That was just a shot at you and your guys.
It was. Because he said Isaiah helped him avoid the vultures. Isaiah helped him get a Toyota 4Runner. Then Chris brings that truck to my dad, talking about I need sounds, I got to get the rims. You know, but he just act like that doesn't exist. I'm telling you, it's amazing how he has perfected his form of revisionist history. But it's going to be exposed. I will make sure of that. Because it's disrespectful to take a man who had his best interests at heart and that of the communities and make him as a villain. I'm not going to sit by and allow it any longer.
No, I think you've been more than patient with some of them. And you guys, when you get in the story and you really, when you read the booster and when we do some other posts, and again, you know, I plan on having even some other people from that Southwestern area because, you know, I wish, again, we had taped the private book event you guys had because there was hours of people who your dad impacted.
Yes.
And the real deal, hearing it from regular guys, not guys, and I'm not knocking Jay or Rose either, but not people whose lives have now elevated and they're on these big stages, so they have to be careful what they say and how they say. Right. But to the normal PSL player who has no agenda, but just to speak the facts of that era with your dad and Southwestern and what was going on with those players. And again, I mean, it's not right. It's easier for me. I mean, you were connected. You were right there with Chris Webber. I think I maybe met the man one time in my life. So I don't have any, you know, it's just not right.
Yeah.
You know, and if it is a shame or guilt, I think, and in my opinion, I think it's a little bit of that too.
Yeah.
It could be something psychological.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think when you get older, and you reach places like the Hall of Fame and make the kind of money that Webber made.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes to be perceived as a villain or a parasite or a user.
Right.
No one likes to be perceived as unappreciative.
Right.
And unfortunately, though, for Mr. Webber, for Chris Webber, when you read the booster, when you talk to the people yourself and many other, because all the things Carl has seen, these things can be collaborated and have been collaborated by numerous people, including the federal government.
Absolutely.
The federal government.
Yeah. And you know, you have to look at that. I mean, why would you want to dispel an error in your life or just lie about it and say it didn't exist and don't mention these people as being there or as integral in your life as they were? But everyone around you knows it. It's like you can't hide that fact, right? It's in plain sight. And so that's why I think it could be something a little more deeper because it doesn't make sense. But it's this again, we talk about a man who said Ward Manuel apologized to him for the incidents in the past, et cetera, and it should have been handled differently, et cetera. And then Ward Manuel said, didn't say any of that. So, you know, when you rely on the AD of a major university and say they said something that they didn't say, and they do have a platform and a mic large enough to deny it and let the public hear it, then there's something a little wrong there.
And there's the parent aspect of it. You know, when you grow older, you look back. Because the actions of a child perceiving at 15, 16, 18 even, how I perceive my parents' actions, when I get to be 40 and I look back on how mom and dad handled the situation, it may not be that pleasant a feeling.
Yes.
There's a quote in your book, you know, the FBI agent, you know, and this is not my, I did not say this, Carl did not say this, this is an FBI agent who went on record to saying that Maceo Webber, Chris's dad, and this was an agent that had over 25 years of dealing
in the organized crime task force, mostly dealing with those people, the tocos and the mafioso major crime people. But his statement was that Maceo Webber was the worst character individual that he ever dealt with.
That's a huge statement.
I mean, you know, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So, and again, you know, we'll go into it back tomorrow on the pod and in the book, because there's so many anecdotes of just good, your father doing what he did, helping them. But before we get off of Chris Webber, go on to track the trailer, because I think those two guys who ended up doing really well in the league, and it's just how they handled the interaction with you and your dad so differently. Enough on Chris. Let's go on to a different. Let's go on to a happier anecdote of a guy who. So I believe Track the Trailer comes out of.
Yeah, Robert Trailer comes out of Murray Wright High School. So,
yeah, unpack that for us.
And so when my dad first met Robert, he instantly he liked him. Robert was a big, like a gentle giant. You know, he's a large man, 6'7", 300 pounds type of thing. But he went to his home, you know, to meet, see his family situation, et cetera, and to meet his family. And he was being raised by his grandmother, about 6'2", 6'3". I mean,
his grandma.
Yeah, one of the agents, another quote for them, would say when he went there to their home, he was like, he was in the land of the giants, you know. Everybody's big. And the other contributing factor, his Aunt Lydia is about 6'1" or 6'3", one of the two. They're large people, right?
Okay.
He said, now they were in this, you know, regular size 1,100 square foot bungalow. He said, can you imagine all these big people maneuvering around in that place, you know? And they were very receptive of Ed because they really understood him maybe better than any family, because they were entrenched in the hood, but his grandmother just had this certain kind of spirit that she knew. She said when she saw the man and met the man, she knew what his spirit was. It was evident to her. So she was never hesitant or afraid. She was just always, I'm thankful for whatever you can do, because, yeah, we do need the help. You know, Robert wears a size 17, 18. I mean, you know, like, you can't just go buy those shoes, different right. things. And so my dad jumped right in and started helping them. And it became a bi-weekly or a tri-weekly stop for him. But they always had these Friday dinners, fish fries, or type of thing. And they were just down-home type people. And let me tell you what that led to. That led to Robert being successful, making it to the pros, starting to get paid, caused his grandmother to say, got paid. What we going to do? You know what? He said, well, she said, well, the first thing, you know, we gonna pay Ed. And they began to pay him out of every check that Robert got from that point until they paid all $110,000 back, $5,000 at a time, out of every check. And even when the federal government came and invaded us, they still kept the checks coming. They didn't do that. In other words, they didn't punk out and decide, like, well, this is an opportunity to hold up, you know. No, they continued it, and they fulfilled their mission of paying back what Ed had delivered to them. And just think, that satisfied them.
Dollar for dollar.
Yeah, he didn't have to make money on them.
Back what I gave you.
Yeah, you making more than I. I mean, you know, you're in the league. You make a million.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because Trey Traylor won first round, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, he's first round. The Cleveland, I believe. I remember the older case is better than the new ones, but but they were upstanding and outstanding people. His Aunt Lydia, when I went and interviewed her for the book, The Booster, I mean, we just had an emotional time because, you know, Ed's gone. And so many things collided just thinking about how Tractor handled his thing and how Chris didn't handle his thing. Mm-hmm. And they even talked about how they feel about that. Like, what's up with that?
You know, yeah. So shout out.
You can pay the man back with one of your checks and just be like, I'm done. But you didn't even have the courage, I say, to do that. We know he didn't have the character, but he didn't have the courage to do that. But Robert did. Robert was one of the few, or the only one, that as an NBA, eventual NBA player, that paid Ed back, that had a substantial amount to pay.
Right. So shout out to Robert Tractor Taylor and to the Traylor family. That's a class act.
Yes.
And then juxtaposed. Again, how Chris Webber handled
Yeah, and I want to make sure that it's known. I look at his dad. I look at Chris's father, Mason, Maxie Weber, and say he had to be the catalyst for this, asking for extended money, accepting it, and then turning a blind eye to paying it back. Because when we couldn't get in touch with Chris after his rookie year, we called Macy, and he asked us, he didn't answer any question about what's going on, where's the payment? Now, could you do me a favor and don't call back? And we're in Chris's lawyer's office at this time, which is probably why he answered the phone. He wasn't coming from ours. But at that point, my dad really took a step back and said, whoa, is this what it seems to be? Because, he has a street element to him. I mean, he's a numbers man. It's a gentleman's game, but it ain't like he ain't know nobody, can't do nothing, get nothing done, happening. And people came knocking on my dad's door like, hey, you got that money back yet? I'm just, well, he coming in town. You know, we can go talk to him if you want. You know, and my father knew what they were implying. He said, you know what? I appreciate the offer. He said, I just can't hurt those kids, even if they hurt me. So,
and you go into that in the book, and I know personally, because we know some of the same people,
yes,
that were of the opinion that basically, hey, Carl, we can get that money back for you.
Yeah,
one of two things can happen.
Yes.
He can give you back the money.
Yes.
Or he'll never dunk a basketball again.
Yeah, right.
But your father was not that kind of...
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't willing to go to that extent.
And you know what? I say the other side of that is if he did that, it would be proven that his investment, if you want to call it that, but his dedication to Chris Weber was placed errantly.
Yes.
As long as he was still out here, it was a chance he could pay back and satisfy that need and fulfill my father's dreams of having come full circle.
Right.
But if he was to do that, it would be admitting what we knew at that time was the truth, that he ain't going to pay. His character is foul, and his family is just as bad or worse. And then the reason why all this, the existence of all this negativity, just Chris started that by going to Sacramento and taking the podium at that point and saying bad things about Ed Martin specifically, because he was the subject of his press conference, because Chris was being called in. He was indicted for perjuring himself.
Perjuring himself concerning the affairs with you and your father.
Did you ever get any money from Ed, Chris? That's what they, in the grand jury? No. It was no, I can't recall. And you can't recall 6 years of getting money from a cat. You can't recall. And as Jada said, although the circumstances were different, they asked him, yeah. It was mostly for pocket change, a couple dollars here, a couple dollars there. If they ask you how much, I don't know. But at least you didn't deny something that everyone else knows.
In the world knew.
The worst people to go and lie from is the federal government, when they've stacked all the evidence of every question they're going to ask you. But
and they already know the answer to the question. So, and Chris's rookie contract was like, that was in the era where they were getting stupid money coming out of college, right?
Yes, and it's quoted in the book, the amount, and so I don't want to re-quote it in error.
But, gotta read it.
But he's got his shoe deal was millions. Yeah, it's just crazy. It wasn't lack of funds. And my partner, who was my partner in creating this book, Mike Evans, that's one of his things.
He said, shout out to Mike Evans. Great
Mike,
guy.
Dante King.
Shout out to Dante and Mike. For real. Good guys.
Yeah. And since I'm on it, I want to say hello to Jim McFarlane. He was the writer that helped me author this book. Great gentleman. Yeah, hey, Bill. Bill Haney was also a contributor. But I digress. What we have to understand is that there's a give and take in all situations. And if you only take and don't do the give part, you violate the rules of engagement. And so when you're comfortable doing that, you wonder where you base that comfortability in. And I'm glad my father was the person that he was, because if he wasn't, well, it may not be a Chris Weber right now. I'm just saying, because that was a lot of money.
That was a lot of money.
And it was a handshake agreement, because my father wasn't going to put it on paper and didn't think he needed to.
Well, your father's a man who makes lots of money because people have a faith. If I book a number with Ed Martin,
yes,
and my number come out,
yes,
Ed gonna pay me.
Yeah, that's right.
It ain't no contracts. It ain't no.
That's right.
That's the world he come from.
I mean, on small days and easy days, it's cool. But when I was in the business, I talk about it in the book. There's some days when paying that hit can be awfully painful because of the size of it, you know. So, yeah. So yeah, you're right. He's used to people making like a contract with you, handshake or no handshake, verbal or whatever, and we fulfill our end. That's what we've always done. That's why I was able to have success in the numbers business so quickly, because they say, oh, yeah, they pay. They're going to pay. And we try to pay them as fast as possible. But that's something.
We're going to get into, because it's fascinating that part. And, you know, I mean, that's why the whole book was just a fascinating story, because to see the convergence. We haven't even got into the plant life and those in Detroit in the 80s yeah. and 90s and what that was all about. But what we got here, Lou?
You had a solid hour.
All right, so we're going to shut it down for today. But for anything else, because obviously we're going to have Carl back. I mean, again, it's an awesome read, guys. I mean, if you're a sports fan, if you're a fan of organized crime, I mean, because it's kind of the numbers and Bumpy Johnson mixed with, what was that Tom Cruise movie about the agent? Jerry Maguire. I don't know. Yeah.
Moneyball.
Maybe it's Hula meets Moneyball.
Right? There you go. There you
something,
go.
Something like that. But again, all the characters, so we didn't even get into, we'll have to pick back up. We were talking about how kind of acts like the whole Mateen Cleaves, the tractor trailer, and that, you know, Mateen Cleaves, you know, guy who went on to, where did Mateen come out of high school?
He came out of Flint. I don't forget if it was northern, but he's a Flint boy. So he come out of Flint, went to Michigan State, and walked him to the championship.
And we got to tease you guys. So those who know, Mateen Cleaves was in a car accident.
Yeah, he was in the rollover. The famous rollover with Maurice Taylor's Limited Expedition, and talking about, you know, that Ed, you know, acquired, obviously, for him, to help him acquire. They were all piled in there. It was five of them. And, you know, can you imagine these three big guys in the back seat? But they hit a patch of ice coming back from a excursion down in the city where Mateev was a visitor, a recruit.
And as I recall, we're going to tease you guys and I'm going to unpack the whole rollover, because that affects Mateen not going to U of M.
Yes.
And why he went to state, where, of course, he goes on. And this Mo Taylor character, we got him. Yes. When he gets back, we got him. Oh, wow. I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a drama. It's a drama-filled story, and it's so great to have the source of it.
It's my pleasure.
But those guys were at your house, yes. Like hours before.
Yes.
The rollover.
They had
right?
to come pick up the bag. You know, Ed had the bag. You know, they sent Robert to the door. He likes you the best. You go get the bag. So he went, got the money. They went to hang out. They hung out till morning. And as they were coming back, you know, there was an accident. There was a patch of ice, slide off the road, a rollover. Robert Trader broke his arm. But greater things came out of that than the tragic broken arm by Robert Trader, too. So. It's a lot there, and we're going to have to spend a little time on that.
Yeah, we got to spend a lot of time on it. We spend a lot of time on the rollover, because I remember in the book when you guys got the call, and I believe it, to paraphrase you and your dad conversation, your dad was pretty much like, this is not good.
This is not good. Mm. I felt like, wait a minute, what just happened? And I knew, like, if the call came to us, but it was at the press first, wasn't no control in that. And so the fallout was going to be tremendous. I mean, and just for example, we went and got attorney after that because we knew it was going to be treacherous, right?
Right.
And had we got the right one, we might have been okay. But anyway, that's a story for a different time.
I'll have you back. A lot going on. Again, thank you so much, Carl, for coming by, Big Boss Man, giving us a chance to get involved with this story. You know, we ain't going to tease the people, but this is a story that obviously got to get on some smaller screens,
yes.
Some mid-sized screens, yes. And then some real big screens.
Real big screens.
And those things are in the works.
Yeah.
So they're progressing along nicely. So we hope to be on those screens pretty soon.
Pretty soon. Yeah. So, but yeah, we'll have you back. Hopefully next week our schedules will work. So look forward to it. Again, you can only get this stuff here, as we say, at Big Boss Filmworks, you know what I'm saying, access to the people because we of the people. So last time, again, Booster.net, Amazon, Amazon Audio, Carl Martin, son of the Detroit Numbers legend, Ed Martin, yeah. Michigan Booster. Hey. Love you, bro. Love look you forward to working for.
Big Boss Films, baby. Let's go. I mean, you do great things, and it's going to be great in the future. Here we go.
There it is. Hit, like, share, subscribe. Send us a comment. You guys got some questions for Carl about that whole Fab Five U of M.
Oh, I love that.
You know, make sure just hit us up in the comment section. We'll make it happen. Maybe we'll go live and we'll definitely get some answers because obviously there's some information and questions that people are familiar with this story. Only you can answer really at this point.
That sounds like a good idea, guys, to answer these questions live.
Yeah.
We can see it.
We need to make that happen.
Put it out on Facebook or YouTube live, one of the two.
All right, Lou Stevens, always holding it down. Shout out to brother Lou.
Hey.
Lou there in the background, the background half of this whole thing that makes it happen. We're going to put Lou on pressure. Lou's got to wrap up the making of the mafia.
Making of the mafia. Watch for it.
And you know what we're doing here is the beginning of the making of something, too.
Yes.
So it's exciting, family.
This is history, folks.
This is history. Full circle. Long time in coming, but we're here now, bro.
We're here now.
So, all right, family, it's your man, CB Jr., Corey Brown Brown Jr., signing off. Big Boss Filmworks. Love you guys. Appreciate you guys. Be blessed. Be well. Live long and prosper.
It was time to really tell a great untold Detroit story because it kind of covers Detroit at its zenith.
Very interesting story.
We decided that we were going to make a movie.
All right, Rich Rossi with you and with Motown Mafia. I'm with Courtney.
Lewis Stevens.
Courtney Brown.
Courtney Brown Jr.
And Alan Al Prophet Bradley.
And this is an entrepreneurial, inspirational story, too, because, again, you know, I'm a real estate retail guy. You know, that's what my skill set is. But I'm a businessman, so I was like, you know, we're going to do it. You know, sometimes when you got a dream, you won't have all the answers on how you're going to do what you're going to do.
But what made this one unique was not so much the crime, but the intertwining with Detroit's history and the Motown era and kind of the economic decline of Detroit. And it's really the story of a family. And from some perspectives, it has a happy ending, like you said. For others, it didn't have a happy
ending. Right, right.